Welcome to the Painting Lines Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things tennis. Join Eric and Aiden in their discussion for updates on news and pop culture, and from hot takes to betting, they've got you covered.
Ready? Set.
Welcome back to Painting Lines. Last week, we gave an update on Wimbledon through the first week, and this week, we're going to be giving a full recap of the last few rounds and the final. So just to start us off, Eric, what were your thoughts overall on the tournament?
Yeah, you know, initially I thought it was a great tournament. It's Wimbledon. I'm always going to love it. But yeah, I kind of figured it would be Djokovic and Alcaraz in the final. Awesome final. They did not disappoint. So overall, good tournament, just not too surprising. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's where kind of the upset aspect comes into it, because we really saw just a lot of those later rounds and the final, you were just seeing kind of just the top seeds mainly in these situations. But it was kind of weird because we didn't see, I feel like, as many super close matches in those later rounds as you might expect having all these top seeds. Like most of the matches you were seeing when it was two high seeded players were only three or four sets, instead of what you might expect with maybe two top 10 seeded players. You might expect them to go for five set matches, but that wasn't really happening.
Who would have thought that Eubanks would have been the last American in the tournament? That one was a shocker.
100%. But you're better the weak hit, and that was a pretty exciting moment.
Well, what are we thinking about Eubanks? Is this a fluke, or is he a serious contender now going forward?
Well, I think we have to kind of wait and see a little bit. I think for Eubanks, because obviously he's really strong on grass. That's really what these couple tournaments showed us. He won in Mallorca and then makes this run at Wimbledon. Really shows how strong he is as a grass court player. I think what we'll see as we continue into the summer hard court seasons is that he may have to adjust his game. We'll see how his game kind of translates from grass to hard court.
Mm-hmm. Right. I don't know. He's getting a little older too. I didn't realize he was upper 20s. He's kind of new onto the scene as far as getting the publicity and great matches, but I thought he was just coming up. I thought he was younger.
Yeah, it is interesting when see kind of success from guys that are around 27, 28, because in tennis, it's such a young person's game that most of the time, the people that you see coming onto the scene and having success are 19, 20, 21. But sometimes you do see these guys later in their career finding their success eventually. I mean, this guy, Kachin, he won the Swiss Open in Stad, and he's 28 years old, a guy that's lower in like the mid 80s or 90s. But then he wins this tournament, and you're like, who is this guy? Should I have expected success from him? Yeah, that's kind of what it is for Eubanks. Like going into 2023, I don't think many people were like, we expect Eubanks to find the success this season, but you never know really with these guys because they're all professional level players.
Right. Was Kachin the one that kissed his dog?
I didn't see that.
When was the Swiss Open that he just won?
He just won it today.
Today? Yeah, then that was him. I saw a post tennis TV. It's pretty funny. You know how people usually kiss their baby after they win, like the whole family comes down?
Yeah.
Well, he pulled his dog out of the stands and started kissing his dog. And it was pretty gross because the dog was licking him right on the lips.
Oh,
and then I'm pretty sure he kissed his wife right after.
She's like, you couldn't have kissed me first.
Yeah, I know, right?
That's pretty funny.
No, going back to what you were saying, I think it's also because of what we saw in, you know, before 80s, 90s, people like McEnroe, Borg, they were just kind of retiring way earlier, Sampras even. So now I think the big three kind of set the stage for longer careers, and people aren't retiring when they're 26 years old anymore and they're just coming into their own. It also comes down to just being more mature too, like having more experience. You know, I'd hope to see a lot more players come into their peak later on too, because that just means they're going to play for a while.
Yeah. It's people taking care of their bodies and the fitness is progressing, and in terms of the diets and the stuff that they're doing just to preserve their body to allow them to play until they're older, and not necessarily hypothetically the optimal age for, I think, physical fitness is like 25.
Mm-hmm. I think it depends on the sport though.
That's true, but I think for tennis, it probably is around 25. Maybe it's even younger.
I could see 25 because younger, you're not full. I think men aren't fully developed until like 22, 23.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like they could even grow after 20 years old.
But then you get to like 28 and it's not like you're in bad shape, obviously, mm-hmm. but it's like you're not necessarily like recovering at the same speed. There's a little bit of a difference. So it is cool to see, I think, yeah, when guys that are getting closer to 30 are finding success.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully Tsitsipas and Ruud can win a slam before they turn 30.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I think it does give hope, though, for guys that are getting older, like not necessarily mm-hmm. like older in terms of the world, but in terms of the tennis career. Mm-hmm. They've been playing professionally for 8-9 years at this point. So you're seeing guys that are still hoping for that success in their career, really. And it would be, I think sometimes I feel like we go a little aggressive on Tsitsipas in terms of his attitude, but I still would like to see him get a slam at some point because he's been in, what is it, 3 finals?
And yeah, well, so has Ruud. Ruud's been in 3 finals as well.
That's true.
I got to watch more of the Point Break because they were talking about the Tsitsipas-Kyrgios beef in Wimbledon, and then they cut the episode, and I didn't watch the next one. So thanks for reminding me. I got to get on that. It was getting really good.
I'm sure. I mean, it's just Kyrgios trolling Tsitsipas.
Yeah, exactly. But today, Rublev beat Ruud in...
Bastad?
Yeah, Bastad, exactly. And in his speech, he's like, hey, Casper, you've made it to 3 Grand Slam finals. That's 3 more than I have. You're doing well. You're a great player. You're a nice guy. Like, he gassed him up big time. And you could tell Casper Ruud, he's a little disappointed, I think, that, you know, one of your credibility, people gassing you up is saying, oh, you've made it to 3 Grand Slam finals. You haven't won them, but you made it there.
It's yeah.
Like, all right. Sure. That's a good feat. I don't mean to be knocking, but.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Rublev is always just going to be – he seems like he's always such a nice guy when he gets interviewed. So.
But then look at him on the court.
I know. So aggressive on the court, yelling all the time. But
smashing rackets.
100%. But I think Ruud, that is the biggest thing. I mean, it is arguable, like, top 5 in the world. Is it bigger than being in 3 Grand Slam finals? Maybe. Because I think, one, if you say this person made it to 3 Grand Slam finals, it's perceived – a little bit negative because it's a loss, right?
Right.
Versus if you say, oh, you were top 5 in the world, that's a success.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know which one you'd rather like have people consider you as.
Oh, that's a great point. I mean, at the end of the day, it was just supposed to be a compliment. So
yeah. It kind of reminds me of the idea of in the Olympics, how they mm-hmm. surveyed the Olympic medalists, and it's supposedly like the silver medalist is significantly less happy than the bronze medalist.
Yeah, because, I do remember that study.
Yeah, because the bronze medalist is like, oh yeah, I got a medal in the Olympics. Uh-huh. They were like, I'm an Olympic medalist. And the silver medalist is like, oh, I could have been the best in the world, but I was just not quite.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's probably the same here.
Yeah.
All right. Should we get into the quarterfinals?
Yeah. We were talking before in our last episode about the Alcaraz-Berrettini matchup. Mm-hmm. Berrettini he won the first set, but it wasn't really a situation where I felt like Alcaraz was in a lot of trouble. Quarters.
But Eubanks-Medvedev was intense.
Yeah, that was.
That was great.
I think the one exciting match from the quarters, to be honest. I mean, yeah. Eubanks was up actually 2-1. And he mm-hmm. forced a tiebreak in the fourth. And I think looking at it in terms of how he was mentally dealing with that, he probably was thinking like, okay, this is my chance. I need to win this tiebreak and I'll be through to the Wimbledon semifinal. Loses the tiebreak. And I think he just took a mental toll on him because he kind of got blown out in that last set.
Yeah, he did. But live, I thought he was going to win. The way things were going the first few sets, and then, yeah, after that tiebreaker, I agree, he was probably just thinking too far ahead. And I feel like I have this theory. I've talked about it on this show multiple times. Almost positive you lose the next set after a lost tiebreak set just because of that mental toll you're saying. You know what I mean? You were Exactly. You were so close to winning, just like the silver medalist, and then you lose, and then it's just kind of like, oh, such a drag.
Yeah, and it's such a momentum shifter.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one benefit.
And it tires you out too.
Yeah, but I think that's one benefit for like a player like Isner or a big server like that, though. I think Eubanks, of anyone, would have a decent chance because he does have a good serve, where the big servers are so used to going into tie breaks because they win their serve so often that they go into a lot of tie breaks because maybe they can't break a better player serve, but they can hold their own. So they're going to go to a lot of tie breaks. So they're more used to having to be like, okay, I'm going to go to this tie break. If I lose, I can still recover versus maybe another player, but it didn't work out for him this time.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Another point I wanted to make about losing the tiebreaker is, so, you know, Andrew Huberman, right?
Yeah.
He was talking about just, I think the episode was on testosterone, competitiveness, or something along those lines. And when you win, you actually increase testosterone, like whatever you're doing that's competitive if you win. So I think that in these tiebreakers, if you lose, it's kind of, it has the opposite effect. Like there's more cortisol that's released in your body. You're not as energized. Whereas if you get that win, you know, you get a whole nother shot of adrenaline. You're juiced up. Testosterone's released. And I think you actually play better after that.
Mm.
And I think that's what we saw in that marathon game with Alcaraz and Djokovic. Remember that 27-minute game?
Yeah.
Like whoever won, Djokovic ended up losing, right?
Yeah.
He lost his serve and then.
And then Alcaraz, he lost
I
the
think
set.
Won the next one. Yeah, he lost his set.
6-1.
Yeah, dude.
100%. But yeah,
let's
get back
about that game.
Let's get back to the semis first before we get on to the final.
Okay.
Just a quick about the semis. Really was not exciting. Like we borderline could skip to the final just because both were pretty routine.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to bring up the concept. Medvedev made it to the semis, but he lost pretty routinely against Alcaraz. So do you think that means, like, I know he won a clay court tournament and he made it to the semis at Wimbledon, but what he has said in the past is like, oh, I'm a hard court specialist. Do you think that's really the case? Do you think when we get to the hard court season, he is going to be a next level player compared to how he was on these other surfaces?
Yes. I say that because in his mind, he is, like, he's going to play better. But I personally think no matter, I don't think you can be a specialist these days. I think a lot of the surfaces play pretty, not equal, but pretty similar. And the fact that he's just saying that, oh, I hate this surface, I'm a hardcore specialist. In his own mind, he probably thinks that he's better on hard court, but I think it's a purely psychological thing.
I think that's actually a great point. I think the psychological aspect of it, like, almost could be a similar thing for, not to harp on Rude's mindset again, but Rude thinking, oh, I'm a clay court guy, or I'm a clay and hard court guy, and then he comes into Wimbledon and loses in round two, and he's like, oh, I'm not a grass court player.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I think that could be a reason, maybe a reason that Medvedev finds more success is that he has that confidence.
Well, he should be better on a grass, right? Because doesn't he just like fast surfaces? I don't know if he's dead set on hard courts or he just doesn't like the pace on.
Well,
clay.
He plays
grass is fast.
He plays super deep, right? A lot of the time. So maybe he likes the hardcore. I think it's a situation where he hypothetically his style might work on clay, but I think he doesn't like kind of how slick it is as a surface.
Yeah, wouldn't you think that he'd be better on clay? Like look at Rude and Nadal. They stand pretty far back as well too.
Exactly.
Guard the baseline. But I think it's because his shot, he's more of like a flat, hard shot. So the clay actually evens that out.
I think that's, I think that's maybe why he considers himself. I think his style of play maybe does line up with hard court the best because he plays deep. So he doesn't necessarily like the speed on the grass, but his shot is flatter. So it doesn't have as much of like a kick up on as it would on clay.
Right. Well, speaking of him sitting back there, I thought Eubanks was going to win with the serve and volley because think about it. When you sit that far back, you can't defend a volley. And it's kind of hard because the further back you are, the less angles you have, I think. So Eubanks could cut him off a little easier there.
Exactly. Instead of
him playing up and attacking the serve.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, and then Djokovic beat Sinner and wasn't a thriller like last year. And so I'm wondering, like, do you think this was just Djokovic playing at a new level, or was Sinner, did Sinner maybe have less confidence after losing to him the previous year?
No, I don't think it was a confidence thing. I think it's, and I also don't think Djokovic like played phenomenally. I think he just played his normal game and forced Sinner to make mistakes, which happened, and eventually just kind of got to the point where he wore him down, like Djokovic is so good at doing.
Exactly.
I don't think it was anything special that he did.
Makes sense.
What about you?
I kind of agree. I think Sinner is maybe a little bit of, he does have a mental thing probably with Djokovic. I think a lot of players probably have a mental thing with Djokovic that you feel like he's not going to ever miss. And so you go into this match and you maybe push a little too hard.
Yeah. Man, I'm just imagining having to play Djokovic right now. And he just seems so intimidating off the court too. You know, like he's a serious guy. He doesn't really joke around when he's in the game mindset. And he just puts it on you.
100%. But yeah, we already talked about the final a little bit, but what a match that was.
Yep. Yep.
Really, like, just an instant classic. Right at the beginning, I mean, Djokovic jumped out, took that first set 6-1. I think it was probably a little bit of what we were just talking about and a little bit of nerves from Alcaraz. And then he kind of settled down in that second and obviously went to that tiebreak. And like you were talking about, Alcaraz wins the tiebreak. And then all of a sudden in that third set, jumps out early lead. And then at 3-1, we had that 26-minute game like you were talking about.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly what it was. That first set, Alcaraz, you know, first Wimbledon final, young kid, playing against Djokovic, lost to him before in the last tournament. So I think he was just nervous. And it's pretty funny because usually it's the opposite. Djokovic usually drops the first set, and then ends up winning the match overall.
Yeah, I think it's, you don't see Djokovic lose, I think, that often when he's out ahead with a good lead.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that 26-minute game was, I do think, a pretty important mental moment. I think even though he would have been up a break still, that would have been such a massive momentum thing for Djokovic, it might have turned the set around.
Right. And instead, did you see at the end of that set, Djokovic was pretty much trying to lose? Like, that's something you have to do, right? Like, you notice he wasn't playing his hardest. He's kind of essentially tossing the set.
It is a weird thing because
you have to.
It's one part of the scoring system in tennis that's a little odd, is because it's so much like, once a set's over, it's over. It doesn't really matter what the score was. He essentially was like, I have no chance in this. I don't want to waste energy against this much younger guy trying to fight back in this set that I'm already down two breaks in.
Yeah, smart move. I wonder if you would ever get to the point, because it's kind of like walking a batter, right, in baseball. I don't know anymore if you even have to throw those four pitches. I think you can just say, like, okay, go on to first base. I wonder if tennis would ever get to that point where Djokovic could have just said to the umpire, hey, like, let's call the set, I'm done.
I don't think so, just because I think tennis is kind of – I think the reason you wouldn't have it in tennis is because in baseball, when you're intentionally walking a batter, it's not giving up a run. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, I'm going to just give you this run and then I'm going to try to lose the game.
Yeah. No, it's different. It's not apples to apples.
Exactly. It's
very situational.
I think it's an interesting idea, but I think it doesn't really, because then you could really have, you know how people like get mad when someone fakes an injury and then they lose the match.
Yeah.
But you could have that literally just without the injury and people wouldn't fake. They could just be like, you know, I don't think I'm going to win. I want to stop the match here. And like, can you imagine how the fans would feel about that? Like,
yeah,
some guy just loses the first set and says, yeah, I'm going to lose, so I'm just going to stop. And then, I mean, so after that 26-minute game and Alcaraz took the third, Djokovic still was able to fight back and take that fourth set, maybe because he preserved that energy.
Yeah, I actually started the match rooting for Alcaraz and ended up wanting Djokovic.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of conflicted with who I was rooting for because I do think Djokovic is maybe the best player of all time, and I kind of wanted to see him get that last accomplishment, which is the calendar slam. Would be really cool to see. But I also, in my heart of hearts, I didn't really want to see him break Federer's record of 8 Wimbledons. So to an extent, I was like, I kind of hope Alcaraz wins just because I don't want that record to get broken. But in the end, I was like, we'll see what happens. And Alcaraz got the win.
Exactly. As long as I just wanted 5 sets and a great match, and that's what I got. So I'm happy.
Exactly. But yeah, it did leave us in, it leaves us in a kind of odd part of the season post Wimbledon. Like, I was looking at all these tournaments that are happening now, and it's like some tournaments go back to clay, and then like there's ATP Newport, which is on grass. So it's like they're kind of just waiting. They're like, okay, let's just play some small tournaments on other surfaces right before we get into the summer hard court stuff.
Yeah, it is a weird time. I wonder if Djokovic is going to take off completely.
He may.
The U.S. Open.
All the way until the U.S. Open's a long time. I think he'll probably
about a month.
He might play in Cincinnati. That's coming up.
That's
right?
A pretty big one. Yeah, that's a 500, right?
I think that's 1,000 in Cincinnati.
1,000.
Yeah. So you're gonna hop into segments.
Yeah, let's do it. What'd you see? What's new?
ATP Newport. We had Alex Michelson make a run to the final, beat Mackenzie McDonald and Isner en route to the final. Pretty impressive wins. He lost to Manarino in the final, but pretty impressive wins considering those guys are a former top 10 player and a current like number 55 or something for McDonald.
Yeah, I know.
And so I'm just wondering, like, is this guy the next, like, the biggest new American prospect? I mean, we've talked about guys like Shelton or Ethan Quinn winning the national championship, but this guy, Michelson, won the Challenger in Chicago and now makes it to the final in Newport. So these are pretty impressive accomplishments. And this is like over 2 weeks that he did these two things. So he actually is shooting up over 100 ranking positions in 2 weeks.
Whoa.
And it's not like 100 ranking positions from like 900 to 850 or something like that. It's from like 250 to like 130 or something like that.
Yeah. And I mean, hey, another American, let's go. Another one on the scene.
Yeah.
Dude, speaking of Shelton, though, have you been watching this like UTS something where he was playing Tiafo and the scoring was like, I looked at it, it was 8-13 and they were doing nicknames. It was like the Mountain as Ben Shelton and then the Big Foe. Weird, weird tennis. Yeah,
pretty weird.
No doubles alley. I don't know.
I don't know.
It's kind of like an entertainment show.
I think so. But yeah, right. He's headed to UGA next year. I guess he's the replacement for Ethan Quinn there. But yeah.
Yeah.
What about you? What'd you see?
Djokovic was actually fined $8,000 for that smash he did in Wimbledon on the net post. And I was thinking about it. They said $8,000 is a record fine for 2023. Dude, that's nothing to him. Like, I thought it was going to be at least 20 grand. Like, think about it. A tournament like Wimbledon, a club like that, and you smash a racket on the post, I feel like you gotta be
on the hook
for a little more.
I mean, that must mean that they took away that French guy, Humbert, I think it was Humbert, whoever it was that French guy, he got fined for throwing the ball in the court.
Oh,
he
yeah.
got fined like way more than $8,000. Like,
maybe he appealed
that fine. Yeah, maybe he appealed, exactly.
Yeah, we'll look into that. But what do you think on that amount? It's pretty low.
I mean, I guess they don't really want to get that mad at him. But I mean, because smashing a racket's like not that odd of a thing.
Yeah, but it could have been dangerous. The way he did it, he let go so he wouldn't hurt his wrist. Remember the announcers were talking about it. So he let go. And dude, what if he just missed the post? Or what if his racket shattered off and a piece hit someone? I don't know. I think $8,000 isn't going to deter any more smashes.
I guess that's true. Yeah. So you want to get into bet of the week?
Yeah, let's do it. I like my bet. I'm taking Monfils +150 over Kokkinakis. I found out Kokkinakis has not played in ATP match since Roland Garros. He's just been playing these challengers. And while Monfils also isn't playing much tennis either, I do think that Kokkinakis is frustrated very easily. And I think Monfils, the way he plays, is going to frustrate him. And ultimately, his game's going to hurt because of it. So going with that.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a good point. I think it could be kind of infuriating playing against Monfils. But we'll see.
Who are you taking?
We'll see how it goes. I'm taking Ethan Quinn over Alexander Vukic, +220 ATP Atlanta. I mean, it's a pretty big upset if that happens. But I think it's not that crazy of a bet. I think Quinn is rapidly getting better. And it's really tough to say what his level is at this point, considering he just turned pro.
Yeah,
he's been getting some good wins at good tournaments. And the improvement aspect, the big thing that I wanted to bring up is, like, on July 5th, he lost to this guy, Mukund Sasikumar. I believe he's Indian. And he lost in three close sets on July 5th. And then 2 weeks later, he beat him, like, really comfortably, 6-3, 6-1.
Whoa.
So
talk about making adjustments.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So that's a pretty rapid change in terms of how those matches went.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. But you want to get into a match of the week?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, other than the Wimbledon final, my match of the week was Tommy Paul losing to John Isner 4-6, 6-3, 7-6. Just an all around great come from behind victory from Isner. You know, third set went to a tiebreaker, super tight. I thought that Isner would have been the heavy underdog in this just because, you know, I feel like Tommy Paul is ranked significantly higher, but Isner's actually won all the meetings they've had before, which is only two, but still, I think Tommy Paul has pretty hard time beating Isner. And I, you know me, huge Tommy Paul fan, and this didn't really faze me. If there was anyone he would lose to, I'd want it to be Isner.
Yeah. I think Isner also gets the advantage, like, on a surface, like, because Newport is grass, so he gets that benefit with his massive serve.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got to go with the final. I mean, it was the match of the week, I think. Incredibly high level of tennis, compelling storyline for both players in the match. And also, I think it was emotional playing for both players. Like, the match meant a ton to both of the guys. And so there's a level where either guy wins and you're going to be like, they deserve it because it meant so much to them.
Yeah, I know. I know you didn't watch the trophy ceremony, but during Djokovic's speech, you know, I think they asked him a weird question, something like, oh, how about your team? You guys look disappointed. And he's like, yeah, no kidding. They look disappointed. And then he looked over at his kid. He's like, hey, I'm just happy to see my son still smiling. Can't wait to hug him. And then broke down, started crying, and had to stop.
Yeah. I actually did see that clip. So
you
it
did?
Was
okay,
pretty
good.
Emotional.
Yeah, tennis, roller coaster of emotions, man.
Yeah.
All right, and that's the show. If you're not already subscribed, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube at Painting Lines Podcast. Feel free to shoot us a DM or email us any questions or thoughts at paintinglinespodcast@gmail.com.